This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bart Ehrman is chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He is an authority on the early church and the life of Jesus. He's here on the program today, on the long line from his office in North Carolina, to talk about his New York Times best-selling book, Misquoting Jesus, the story behind who changed the Bible and why. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining me and spending a little bit of time with us. The phone lines are open, of course, at 977-1070. Bart, tell us a little bit about your background, because you at one time were a fundamentalist Christian. You were a graduate of the Moody Bible Institute in Wheaton College. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what led you to doing some of the scholarly work that you do.
Right. Well, I got interested in the study of the Bible as an evangelical Christian for religious reasons. And so when I was in college, I took Greek, and I got interested in reading the Greek manuscripts of the New Testament. And as I went on in my studies, I went on to Princeton Theological Seminary eventually, I started actually finding problems with my former belief. What I had believed is that the very words of the Bible had been inspired by God. But the more I studied the ancient manuscripts, I realized that that there was a problem, because we don't have the originals of any of the copies of the New Testament. What we have are copies that are much later, in most cases many centuries later, and these copies all differ from one another in big ways and in little ways. What we have is a case where we've got thousands of manuscripts, but hundreds of thousands of differences among these manuscripts, so that there are some places where scholars debate what the original text said, and there are some places where we don't even know.
What are the earliest known Christian texts that we have of the Bible? How old are the oldest ones?
Well, the very oldest piece that we've got is a little fragment that's about the size of a credit card that was found in a trash heap in Egypt, and it contains pieces of verses of John chapter 18 on it, and it was probably written in the early second century, so it's about 30 or 40 years after the Gospel of John, but it's only a few words. We don't get a complete manuscript of any of the books of the New Testament until about the year 200 or so, and we don't get any full copies of any of the New Testament until about the middle of the 4th century, so that's 300 years after the books were originally written. And the problem is that over those 300 years, scribes have been copying their text, sometimes accidentally making mistakes, and sometimes intentionally changing them, so that depending on which manuscript you follow, you have a very different reading for this or that verse of the New Testament.
We're talking with Bart Ehrman. He's chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. His book, New York Times bestseller, is Misquoting Jesus. Tell us about that process of the scribes copying the texts. You know, we sort of picture the monk in the monastery sort of mumbling to himself all day long as he's drawing these beautiful, beautiful texts with the pictures and everything and copying them. Explain that whole tradition to us, and then we'll look at perhaps how that tradition may have, in your view, in the view of most scholars, may have led to changes in the text.
Right. Well, we think of the monk in the monastery, and in the Middle Ages, that's probably how it happened. Before we get to that point, though, in the early centuries, the Bible, the New Testament, was copied just by anybody who happened to be literate and was able to do the job. And mostly this would have been untrained non-professionals. And so the problem was that the only way to get a book in the ancient world was to copy it by hand. There was no other way to reproduce books, and that meant copying the books one page, one sentence, one word at a time. And as you pointed out, this obviously leads to the possibility of mistakes being made and also intentional changes.
And tell us about the King James Bible, that which most of us are familiar with and really has sort of the version that has dominated Western Christianity now for hundreds of years. Tell us the background on the King James Bible.
Well, so the King James Bible was being translated about 400 years ago, and I think everybody agrees that it's a masterpiece of English literature. That isn't the same thing as saying that it's a great translation in terms of accuracy. One of the problems with the King James translation is that the the translators 400 years ago had access only to a few manuscripts of the Bible. And over the intervening 400 years, many, many more manuscripts have been discovered, and many manuscripts that are much older than the ones that were available to the King James translators, so that now we have a much better sense of what the oldest form of the text was than the King James translators had.
So Bart Ehrman is our guest. So now would actually be a better time to put together the concise interpreted, you know, the Bible right back to the source, the earliest sources, than during King James's time.
Yeah, it's a bit of an irony, but even though we're 400 years further removed from the originals, we have a much better idea of what the originals looked like. But that's because of all the archaeological discoveries and all the research that's been done in these past 400 years, that we have a better idea of what the New Testament originally looked like.
Well, then let's look more closely then at this idea of misquoting Jesus. How then, perhaps in the King James Version or in the Bibles that most people are familiar with, was Jesus misquoted?
Well, I'll give you one example, a very famous story that probably the most popular story in the Gospels about Jesus is the story of Jesus and the woman caught in the act of adultery. This is when they lead the woman to Jesus, and they want to know whether Jesus thinks they should stone her to death or not. And Jesus stoops down to the ground, and he looks up, and he says, "Let the one without sin among you be the first to cast a stone at her." They all begin to go away until there's nobody left except for the woman. He looks up and he says to the woman, "Is there no one here to condemn you?" She says, "No, Lord, no one." And he says, "Well, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." So this is a beautiful story with several quotations of Jesus in it. The problem is this story is not found in any of our earliest and best manuscripts. This story, in fact, didn't originally belong in the New Testament, in the Gospel of John. It appears to have been added by later scribes. And so when these scribes attributed these words to Jesus, it was, in fact, a misattribution. This is a story that had been in the oral tradition, but it's not something that had happened.
So it would be as if I went out today and wrote a story about Thomas Jefferson doing something, and then the world would take that as gospel, that is, in fact, what Thomas Jefferson did and said.
Yeah, well, the story of George Washington and the cherry tree, we actually know that somebody made it up. And we have the same thing with Jesus. People made up stories and attributed things to him that he didn't actually say.
Well, this is the big question then that a lot of believers and non-believers will have is how much of the New Testament then is that kind of stuff where it was made up by somebody who was translating or copying the text over these, you know, thousands of years?
Well, that's something that scholars debate rather vociferously, is how much of the New Testament is historically reliable and how much of it is based on oral tradition. And what I do in misquoting Jesus is what I look at specifically is how the text actually gets changed once it was written down. There's a prior question. If someone like Matthew's writing down the words of Jesus, there's the prior question of how Matthew knew what Jesus actually said and whether Matthew, in fact, is inheriting traditions that have been changed in the process of oral transmission. But my question in misquoting Jesus is, suppose Matthew wrote something down, how do we know what the words are that Matthew actually wrote? Since we don't have Matthew's gospel itself, we only have copies from hundreds of years later.
Bart Ehrman is the chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's an authority on the early church and the life of Jesus. He's appeared on the History Channel and CNN. And today he's on Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you have a comment or a question as a believer or a non-believer or perhaps an agnostic, Bart, this your scholarly work must certainly have affected your own beliefs. You know, at one time, a self-admitted fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah, well, it certainly did change my views. I got to a point where it no longer made sense to me to say that God had inspired the words of the Bible, because in some places we don't have the words of the Bible, and so it didn't make any sense for God to have inspired them if he didn't preserve them. And so I gave up on my fundamentalist views of the Bible. And once I did that, I started questioning everything that I believed. The Bible itself, the divinity of Christ, eventually the existence of God. And over a long period of time, for a lot of different reasons. I eventually became an agnostic, which is what I am now. So about 9 or 10 years ago, I became an agnostic, not knowing whether God exists or not.
Bart, ultra-conservative scholars contend now, and it's a strong tradition in the Christian church, that the Bible is without error. But you point out in your book that this is actually a new idea.
Yeah, in the American South, people think that this is what Christianity is, which is a belief in the inerrancy of the Bible. But that's never been what Christianity is until the 20th century. The idea that the Bible is inerrant is a 20th century invention. Most Christians throughout history haven't thought that. And one way you can show that pretty convincingly is simply to look at the creeds that are recited in churches today, such as the Nicene Creed or the Apostles' Creed. They don't say anything about the Bible, because the belief in the Bible was never central to Christian belief until certain cultural factors made it that way in certain parts of America.
Bart Ehrman is our guest, and we're talking about his book, Misquoting Jesus, The Story Behind Who Changed the Bible and Why, a New York Times bestseller, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Chris is online, too. Chris, thanks for the program. Thanks for joining the program. You're on with Bart Ehrman. Go right ahead.
Hey, Coy. Hey, Bart. I've got a comment. I've got a pretty cool Bible where I honestly don't remember what the name of it is, but like all these rabbis and priests and Muslims came together, and all through it there are annotations where, you know, this verse has an annotation, and all the annotations are different texts say different things. But that's neither here nor there. What I'd like to know about from Bart is, Bart, what do you think about the Gospel of Thomas?
Well, the Gospel of Thomas was discovered in 1945, and it's a very interesting gospel. It contains 114 sayings of Jesus, many of which are found in the New Testament as well, but a number of them are quite different from anything in the New Testament. And these other sayings that are not in the New Testament, many of them sound very Gnostic. And so some people have thought that the Gospel of Thomas is one of these Gnostic Gospels that has a very different slant on the world we live in and the importance of Jesus. So I think it's probably the most important Gospel to be discovered in modern times.
Bart, tell folks, and I only know because I've read almost every book of Elaine Pagel's and some of yours, but tell folks who were the Gnostics, and a little bit about their work and what separated them, perhaps, from the later, more mainstream traditions of Christianity.
Sure, I'll do this in 20 seconds or less. This is a very big issue. They're called Gnostics because of the Greek word for knowledge, which is gnosis, spelled with a G. These were people who were in the know. Specifically, they knew the secrets that could bring salvation to them, salvation from this evil material world. Gnostics believed that this world had been created by an inferior deity, so that the creator God is not the true God, and the goal of salvation is to escape our material trappings in this world to return to the spiritual realm. And you escape by having the secret knowledge that these Gnostic religions convey. So that it's not by the death and resurrection of Jesus that one is saved, it's by learning the secret teachings that Jesus conveyed.
It sounds very Buddhist in a way.
Some people have likened it to Buddhism, and there are elements of dualism in Gnostic thought, the separation of spirit and matter and the importance of spirit over matter. And so some people have seen a lot of connections with a variety of Eastern religions.
Chris, you are a fan of the Gospel of Thomas?
Well, it's something I had heard about years ago when I was living in Virginia Beach, and I actually researched it and found it on the Internet, and I read it. And it was pretty interesting. And then I found out that watching a show on History Channel, it was one of the books that were decided by whoever came up with the Bible that it should not, one of the books that should not be in the Bible.
I actually have a chapter that I devote to the Gospel of Thomas in another book of mine called Lost Christianities, where I deal with the forms of Christianity that didn't make it, including various kinds of Gnosticism. And I talk about how the Gospel of Thomas was discovered and what its teachings are and how these teachings differ from the points of view that eventually became dominant in early Christianity.
And tell us, Chris, thank you so much for the call. Tell us about that process of what was decided. There were a whole lot of early Christian texts that were left out of the Bible.
Well, that's right. We have about 40 or so other Gospels, for example, that didn't make it in that we know about today. What a lot of people think is, based on their reading of the Da Vinci Code, is that the Emperor Constantine decided which books would be in the Bible in the early 4th century at the so-called Council of Nicaea. That's not actually right. There never was a church council, a worldwide church council, that voted on which books to include, but there were massive debates that went on for centuries. It's not until the end of the 4th century that anybody of any stripe listed the books that are now in the New Testament and said that these are the books and there are no others. So it was a process, a long process, that took several hundred years before we ended up with these particular books.
Bart Ehrman is chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. His book is Misquoting Jesus, New York Times bestseller. Explain some of the politics of the time in the decisions that were made to leave out some of these texts. And specifically, I'm thinking about a lot of those texts had very different viewpoints about women, for example.
They had different points of view about women, about Jews, about theology. Some of these texts insisted that Christ, for example, was a human being, but he wasn't divine, and others insisted that he was divine, but he wasn't human. Some texts seemed to give a higher role of women in the church, and so a variety of texts with a variety of points of view. And what ended up happening is that Christianity had to decide what it was going to stand for and what it was going to believe, and there were debates among different groups, debates over theology, about practical issues, about how to run the churches and so forth. And one group ended up winning these debates, and it decided what Christians for all time would believe and how the churches would be organized. That was the group that ended up writing the creeds. And it was the group that ended up deciding what the canon of the New Testament would be. It's also the group whose scribes produced the texts that I talk about in Misquoting Jesus. So that there are places where scribes who are influenced by the perspectives of this winning group change their text in light of their beliefs.
So they absolutely, the scribes, changed the text from the original or the older text that they had. They purposefully changed them based on what their bosses were saying at the time.
Yeah, well, it certainly looks like it, because there are passages that get changed in the New Testament toward the Orthodox point of view. I mean, just as an example, there's no place in the Bible that explicitly teaches the doctrine of the Trinity, that there are three persons in the Godhead and yet these three are one. The only place that you can find that is in a passage in 1 John chapter 5, verses 7 and 8, which were found in the Latin Vulgate throughout the Middle Ages, but it didn't make it into any of the Greek manuscripts. So originally it wasn't there. But the theologians in the Middle Ages used the Latin Vulgate, and there you do have an explicit statement of the Trinity. And so that's the sort of thing where a scribe has added it to the text for theological reasons.
Religion scholar Dr. Bart Ehrman is our guest at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Margaret is online, too. Margaret, thanks for the call. You're on with Bart Ehrman.
Hi. I just have a couple of comments. First, I would like to say, as hopefully an intellectual person, I do seek the truth in things. But secondly, I find it very disappointing that you would air this kind of program right before Easter. He did mention something about oral tradition, and it seems to me that when it regards Jewish people, American Indians, blacks, and you name it, oral tradition is taken as sacrosanct. And in fact, what else is sacrosanct? Is Judaism and the Muslim religion. Christianity, and especially Catholicism, has been attacked through every way in the media. You can't watch Law and Order without a priest, a nun, or a Catholic school child being the killer. You can't open a Newsweek or Time magazine without this kind of criticism and put down. We're heading towards a secular country, I guess, is the problem, or how I see it as a problem. Instead of having freedom of religion, that you've got your Borat movies and everything else out there attacking Christianity and making fun of Christians. And, you know, this was very insensitive, Coy, to put on this man who I give all credence to, he can believe what he wants, but to put this program on before Easter is very insensitive.
Margaret,
can
thank you for the...
that?
Yeah, Margaret, did you have a question besides that?
Let me
respond to her statement, because
I
welcome her point of view, but
yeah.
I have to say that if the point of Christianity is to ignore the facts of history, then there's something wrong. I'm not denouncing belief or Christian faith at all. In fact, I learned all of this material that I've been talking about training to be a Christian minister at Princeton Theological Seminary. So there isn't any castigation of Christianity here. This is simply talking about the facts of history.
I didn't get anything in any of your work that was at all an attack on Christianity, so she's sort of catching me off guard. I'm not seeing this at all as even against Christianity.
No, well, certainly not. Most of the scholars who do the kind of work that I'm describing are very committed Christians.
In fact, if anything, this would actually add to the Christian experience, because you have a richer understanding and appreciation of the Christian tradition itself.
Well, the Christian tradition has always been based on historical claims, but that means that doing history is vital to understanding what real Christianity is. And so there's no point in trying to deny history or to try and ignore history, because, in fact, it's all part of being Christian.
Bart Ehrman is chair of the Department of Religious Studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. His book, a New York Times bestseller, is Misquoting Jesus, the story behind who changed the Bible and why. Bart, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Okay.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at CVillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit CVillePodcast.com for more.